Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I get to read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. I have our must list today. I have a return to a list I didn't finish last week, but it's a really good one, and some Thanksgiving episodes on television because it is the season. So first up, that must list. Wicked for Good, Celebrity Traitors UK, and a beloved Replacements album top this week's must list. The Japanese film Kokuho and Oedipus on Broadway round out our picks for the weekend. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. In an age where even our pop culture is fractured depending on our various algorithms, it's rare that we get a cultural touchstone that permeates like Wicked. For that reason alone, sequel for Good has me saying, thank goodness. It's just gravy that it's actually a magical theatrical experience. That's Patrick Gomez, editor-in-chief. So on the top of our must list is Wicked for Good. Did you really think this movie wouldn't top our weekly list? Elphaba and Glinda's epic story wraps up in the sequel to last year's Wicked, and get ready for the waterworks in the movie's namesake friendship-defining musical number. But not before all of Oz tries to capture the Wicked Witch. And, of course, we get two new songs and see who becomes Tin Man. The real treat, though, is Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, who really just need to be in every movie musical for the rest of time. For good. The Celebrity Traitors UK. Stephen Fry, Alan Carr, Paloma Faith, and Charlotte Church are just a few of the stars around host Claudia Winkleman's roundtable for the UK's first celebrity edition of The Reality Favourite on Peacock. But you'll also fall for former rugby player Joe Marler. The Replacements, Let It Be. Why simply let it be when you can add more? The beloved 1984 album from Minneapolis's legendary Troublemakers gets the 4-LP deluxe treatment, complete with alternate takes, a previously unreleased version of Androgynous, new liner notes, and an entire 28-song live set. Kokuho. Prolific Japanese director Lee Sang-il's sumptuous and classic new epic traces the life of a kabuki star over six decades. A national phenomenon, Kokuho is on track to become Japan's highest-grossing live-action feature ever. And the last on our list is Oedipus. Mark Strong and Leslie Manville headline this modern political take on the classic Sophocles tragedy, currently wrecking audiences at Studio 54 on Broadway. An onstage clock counts down ominously as the couple marches blissfully unaware toward their terrible fate. That's the must list this week. It's Wicked for Good, Celebrity Traitors UK, and a beloved Replacements album topping this week's list. And it was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. Last week, I had started an article ranking the 30 most memorable Best Actor-winning performances in Oscar history. It's by Kevin Jacobson, and I got through the first 20 and left us hanging on the top 10. That's the top 10 ranked, according to Entertainment Weekly. So, here we go. I'm going to finish with number 10 being Friedrich March, from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, 1931. Robert Louis Stevenson's classic novella, Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, has been adapted dozens of times in various formats, but Frederick March's portrayal of the title characters makes this 1931 film version the definitive one for us. This is also a significant Oscar win as a rare horror performance to be acknowledged by the Academy. Additionally, he won the award in a tie with the champ's Wallace Beery, another rarity. March brings his everyman charisma to the part of Dr. Jekyll, a scientist with a morbid fascination with the goodness and evil of humanity. His curiosity leads him to develop a potion that transforms him into the sadistic Mr. Hyde, where March goes to fascinating, malevolent places that show he's more than just your average matinee idol. Number 9, Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln from 2012. First came the stories that Daniel Day-Lewis had stripped his life of all modern conveniences and was trying to inhabit the mindset of a man from the mid-19th century. Then came the first breathtaking image, a photo of the actor in full Lincoln makeup and costume. Gaunt, pensive, haunted. Finally, we heard him speak with a reedy delivery that contradicted the stentorian voice subsequent generations applied to Lincoln's almighty presence in the history books. But according to historians, that higher-pitched voice contributed to his power as an orator in that pre-microphone era, since the sound would carry further in a large crowd. Day-Lewis, along with director Steven Spielberg and screenwriter Tony Kushner, cut through the mythology of the Civil War Commander-in-Chief to give us such a true portrait of Abraham Lincoln, we almost didn't recognize him. Now it's Day-Lewis's portrayal that belongs to the ages. Number 8, Alex Guinness, The Bridge on the River Kwai from 1957. A proud and proper English officer tortured at a Japanese POW camp during World War II, Alex Guinness's Colonel Nicholson is the soul of David Lean's still fresh epic. His personal fog of war twists his priorities so that he supervises the construction of a strategic bridge that will serve the Japanese but stand forever as a monument to the British fighting spirit. Standing next to his Japanese rival on the completed bridge, he reminisces about his life. There are times when suddenly you realize you're nearer to the end than the beginning, he says, and you wonder, you ask yourself, what the sum total represents. Nicholson accidentally drops his cane and it stops him from completing a thought that every human being who's a cog in a wheel has considered, or someday will. The afterthought, what have I done, tragically comes later. Number 7, Sidney Poitier in Lilies of the Field, 1963. Sidney Poitier made history as the first black actor to win the Oscar for Best Actor for a film that may seem slight on the surface, but in actuality is a great representation of his one-in-a-million skill as a leading man. Poitier stars as Homer Smith, a drifter who turns up in a small Arizona town and helps a group of nuns construct a chapel for the local community. Poitier brings his megawatt charm to the proceedings as Homer gets to know the convent, taking this opportunity to not only do good, but to satisfy his architectural dreams. While it's sometimes easier and more impressive when actors play bad, there's something profound when someone can embody decency with seemingly effortless grace while still being fully believable as a flawed human being. And that's what Poitier does here. Number 6, Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest from 1975. Prior to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Jack Nicholson had been nominated 4 times in 6 years without a win. But his triumph at the 1976 ceremony was not simply a recognition of his remarkable hot streak. Nicholson's portrayal of a rebellious mental hospital inmate is a phenomenal combination of sly intelligence and impish braggadocio, best showcased during a scene where, thwarted in his attempt to watch the World Series on TV, McMurphy ad-libs a commentary in front of a blank set. Nicholson's fireworks would be subsequently aped and amped up to over-the-top proportions by other actors and by the future Batman villain himself, Here, however, his anti-authoritarian antics perfectly light up one of cinema's great masterpieces. Number 5, and you knew this had to be on the list somewhere, Marlon Brando in The Godfather, 1972. Marlon Brando had semi-coasted through the 60s on reputation, and he was in need of a creative and popular comeback when Francis Ford Coppola came calling with his adaptation of Mario Puzo's Mafia Page-Turner. The studio preferred Ernest Borgnine or George C. Scott, anyone but the mercurial Brando to play The Godfather, but Coppola got his way. As the Don, the 46-year-old Brando was aged up and gave a performance that became ingrained with American culture practically the day after the film opened. Despite half a century of cheap parody, it's an inimitable acting achievement. Number 4, here is George C. Scott in Patton, 1970. George C. Scott didn't attend the Oscars to collect his honor. He considered the show a two-hour meat parade and didn't feel acting should be turned into a sport. His refusal to even allow the statue to be sent to him is a kind of grit and integrity seldom found in an industry fueled by ego. Still, there's no denying that his performance as the eccentric, explosive World War II general was one of the greatest ever filmed. Patton was not constrained by such humility. Vain, ambitious, and intolerant of the suffering of others, he pushed the U.S. 7th Army through the Mediterranean and into the hellfire of Europe through sheer force of will. At times, Scott's Patton seems insane with zeal. Other times, we see the tender cluster of neuroses shielded by his hardened, bellicose exterior. While most old soldiers, like Carl Malden's superb, empathetic General Omar Bradley, absorb the senseless loss of life of war with regret and resolve that the sacrifice was necessary, Scott's Patton reveals the darker side of humanity that craves conflict, that lives for it. Surveying a smoldering battle scene, he's moved not to tears, but to a grim satisfaction. I love it. God help me, I do love it so. Number 3, Adrien Brody in The Pianist from 2002. Adrien Brody's win for The Pianist is one of the most shocking upsets in Oscar history, having won none of the major precursors leading up to the night and winning over heavyweight favorites Daniel Day-Lewis and Jack Nicholson. This also made him the youngest Best Actor winner in history at the age of just 29 years old. But if you watch Brody's performance outside the context of that awards season, his winning an Oscar for it comes as no surprise. He gives an astonishingly raw performance as Władysław Spilman, a real-life Polish Jewish musician who survived the horrors of the Holocaust. While the specifics of Spilman's perilous journey are unique, Brody's portrayal makes his story universal as an ordinary person like any of us, thrust into an extraordinary situation. Number 2, Robert De Niro in Raging Bull, 1980. Playing boxer Jake LaMotta, Robert De Niro gave all of his mind and body to this portrait of a man destroyed by his anger, his jealousies, his pride, his retrograde notions of manhood. Not everyone was awed by the performance, although critic Pauline Kael's famous denunciation, "a swollen puppet with only bits and pieces of a character inside," may have ironically summed up everything poignant and terrifying about De Niro's imagining of this jaundiced soul. Taking method acting to a new extreme, De Niro famously put on 60 pounds to play post-prime LaMotta. In theory, we shouldn't be too impressed by this. Oscars shouldn't be given for most eating or most willing to hurt themselves for art, and yet, watching De Niro in Raging Bull, you can understand why serious actors abuse themselves for greatness. It's a staggering achievement of transformative truth-seeking inside and out. And number one, Marlon Brando, On the Waterfront, 1954. So much has been said about Marlon Brando's simmering method genius during the early 50s that watching his revolutionary approach to acting now couldn't possibly live up to the hype, right? Wrong. Dead wrong. In Elia Kazan's still explosive working-class morality play about a palooka-turned-longshoreman who stands up to union boss corruption on the docks, Brando is both hypnotic and heartbreakingly human. In every scene, he's being devoured by regret, torn apart about doing the right thing, and simmering with an existential anxiety that could blow at any second. You needn't look any further than the film's most iconic and quoted scene, Brando's "I could have been a contender" speech in the back of a car with his brother Charlie, played by Rod Steiger. More than 70 years later, it still feels anguished and vital, and it still gives you glorious goosebumps. There you have it. Those were the top 10 of the 30 most memorable Best Actor winning performances in Oscar history, ranked. I didn't go back over who the other 20 were, but the article is there at EW.com. So as I'm recording this, it's almost Thanksgiving. We're coming up on Thanksgiving week, and here is an article about the 32 best Thanksgiving episodes to watch this holiday season, from Gilmore Girls to Modern Family. Prepare for a different kind of Turkey Day binge. This is by Allison Sandler, Rachel DeSantis, Kevin Jacobson, and Alamin Yohannes. Thanksgiving tends to get the shaft when it comes to themed holiday episodes compared to its sister holidays. Sure, it's fun to see our favorite characters dressing up for Halloween or getting festive at Christmas time, but Thanksgiving provides a healthy helping of conflict that's ripe for good TV, as families gather together with the best of intentions despite the dysfunction. Between earnest family traditions that we know, like from Parenthood or This Is Us, and chaotic hijinks, think Gilmore Girls or Modern Family, the best Thanksgiving episodes find creative ways to explore their characters' relationships, especially when their expectations don't align. Ahead, we explore 32 of our favorite Turkey Day episodes worth binging during the holiday season. These are not ranked, but the first of the list is The Bernie Mac Show, Season 3, Episode 22, Thanksgiving. Vanessa, played by Camille Winbush, decides she wants to become a vegetarian days before Thanksgiving after her teacher, Mr. Diggs, played by Don Franklin, tells her about growing up on a farm. Bernie, played by Bernie Mac, is none too pleased to attend Mr. Diggs' vegan Thanksgiving for Vanessa's sake, and naturally gets jealous, not to mention hungry. He enlists Jordan, played by Jeremy Suarez, to smuggle turkey into the meat-free dinner, and Jordan ends up sharing his stash with Mr. Diggs' son, who's never had meat in his life. We can watch The Bernie Mac Show on Netflix. Number two is Bewitched. Boy, that goes back, doesn't it? Season 4, Episode 12, Samantha's Thanksgiving to Remember. No sitting around full of turkey and stuffing for this crowd. Instead, Samantha, played by Elizabeth Montgomery, takes everyone back to see the pilgrims via some witchy time travel, and Darren, played by Dick York, ends up on trial for witchcraft. We can watch Bewitched on Hulu. Bob's Burgers, Season 4, Episode 5, Turkey in a Can. Thanksgiving episodes have become a yearly tradition on Bob's Burgers, but this Season 4 gem remains its finest Turkey Day offering. Turkey in a Can centers on Bob, played by H. John Benjamin, preparing for the holiday, only to discover someone keeps sabotaging him overnight by dumping each bird in the toilet. once the mystery is solved, it leads to a surprisingly sweet revelation. We can watch Bob's Burgers on Hulu. The Brady Bunch, Season 2, Episode 4, The Un-Underground Movie. Greg, played by Barry Williams, is making a movie about the first Thanksgiving, but the Bradys don't appreciate his vision and complain. The eldest Brady boy decides he's had enough before the family realizes the error in their ways and make the movie in full pilgrim garb, just as Greg wanted. We can watch The Brady Bunch on Paramount Plus. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Season 1, Episode 10, Thanksgiving. Some people celebrate Thanksgiving with family, others with friends, or you can have all your coworkers over. Amy, played by Melissa Fumero, serves up Thanksgiving dinner for the precinct, and everyone gets a taste of her terrible cooking before Captain Holt, played by Andre Brager, and Jake, played by Andy Samberg, ditch to take down a perp. We can watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Peacock. Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. It's the holiday classic for the ages. Charlie Brown, played by Todd Barbee, and Sally, played by Hilary Momberger, are supposed to go to their grandparents, but end up getting hoodwinked into inviting the likes of Peppermint Patty, played by Christopher DeFaria, and Franklin, played by Robin Reed, and Marcy, played by Jimmy Ahrens. We can watch a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving on Apple TV. Cheers! Season 5, Episode 9, Thanksgiving Orphans. While it takes place outside of Cheers' usual bar locale, Thanksgiving Orphans remains a classic. The core cast gathers around the table to trade barbs over a Thanksgiving meal gone wrong and offers viewers a look at a family of friends together for the holiday. We can watch Cheers on Paramount Plus. Chuck, Season 1, Episode 10, Chuck versus the Nemesis. Don't you just hate when your former best friend crashes Thanksgiving dinner to romance your fake spy girlfriend? Chuck, played by Zachary Levi, spends his Thanksgiving watching his girlfriend, Sarah, played by Yvonne Strahovski, debate running away with his nemesis, Bryce Larkin, played by Matt Bomer, as if the holidays aren't already stressful enough. We can watch Chuck on Amazon Prime Video. Our number 9 of 32 is Everybody Loves Raymond. This is Season 3, Episode 10. The episode's called No Fat. After a visit to the senior health fair, Marie, played by Doris Roberts, decides she and Frank, played by Peter Boyle, should start eating healthy. And Deborah, played by Patricia Heaton, concurs. The two start scheming a no-fat Thanksgiving while Raymond, played by Ray Romano, Frank, and Robert, played by Brad Garrett, watch in horror as their Thanksgiving dreams turn into a nightmare involving a jiggling tofurkey. We can watch Everybody Loves Raymond on Paramount Plus. Felicity, Season 1, Episode 9, titled Thanksgiving. During the first season of Felicity, the college set series brought Friendsgiving to TV, telling the story of a different kind of family celebration. Felicity, played by Keri Russell, and her new friends came together to seek solace by avoiding the issues waiting for them in their hometowns. While Felicity's celebratory meal had its share of drama and a few curveballs, the episode demonstrated the power of friendship and how it can be vital during the holidays. We can watch Felicity on Hulu. Fresh Off the Boat, Season 2, Episode 8. Whangsgiving is the name of it. Every family has certain traditions that have to be observed every Thanksgiving. For Jessica, played by Constance Wu, it's a 5 a.m. phone call from her mother telling her whether she or her sister Connie, played by Susan Park, will host Thanksgiving. The pressure is on when Jessica is chosen to host Whangsgiving and goes into overdrive. We can watch Fresh Off the Boat on Hulu. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Season 1, Episode 12, Talking Turkey. Will, played by Will Smith, comes to Bel Air for a new life, but he gets a taste of home early on in its run when his mother comes for a visit. This episode of the beloved comedy's first season centers on Viola Smith, played by Vernie Watson-Johnson, spending Thanksgiving with her son and family, armed with lots of opinions. Viola criticizes how lazy the kids are, and hilarity ensues when tasked with cooking Thanksgiving dinner. We can watch The Fresh Prince of Bel Air on Hulu. Friends, Season 5, Episode 8, the one with all the Thanksgiving flashbacks. The one where the gang looks back on all their terrible Thanksgivings through the years. Chandler, played by Matthew Perry, remembers his parents telling them they're getting divorced over dinner. Joey, played by Matt LeBlanc, recalls getting his head stuck in Monica's, that's Courtney Cox's, turkey. Classic. Monica relives the horror of meeting Chandler for the first time when he called her fat, and the following year when she accidentally cut off his toe. Monica puts a turkey on her head to cheer Chandler up, and he ends up telling her he loves her. We can watch Friends on HBO Max. George Lopez, Season 2, Episode 9, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Honey? Thanksgiving dinners can get awkward around the dining room table, and George, played by George Lopez, certainly set himself up for one such encounter after he invited his mother's one-night stand from 35 years ago. Lalo, played by Cheech Marin, and Lalo's partner, Charles, played by John Michael Higgins. George thinks Lalo might be his father, but Benny, played by Belita Moreno, and Lalo confirmed they did not actually sleep together, making it impossible for him to be George's dad. We can watch George Lopez on Peacock. Gilmore Girls, Season 3, Episode 9, A Deep-Fried Korean Thanksgiving. In true Gilmore fashion, Lorelai, played by Lauren Graham, and Rory, played by Alexis Bledel, commit to more than one Thanksgiving dinner, prompting the mother-daughter duo to rush between their multiple engagements with stops for Lane's, that's Kiko Agena's tofurkey, Luke's, played by Scott Patterson's traditional diner dinner, Suki, played by Melissa McCarthy, and Jackson's, played by Jackson Douglas's deep-fried turkey, and Emily and Richard's, that's Kelly Bishop and Edward Herman's, formal affair, inspiring comedic chaos. We can watch Gilmore Girls on Netflix. Gossip Girl, Season 1, Episode 9, Blair Waldorf Must Pie. Did we mention Thanksgiving can be stressful, even for the young and the glamorous? In the brilliantly titled Gossip Girl episode, Blair Waldorf Must Pie, everything is messier than usual as Serena, played by Blake Lively, and her family attend the Humphreys' Thanksgiving dinner, and secret affairs of the past are deduced. Meanwhile, Blair, played by Leighton Meester, is triggered by her father's absence at the Waldorf's dinner, resurfacing an eating disorder. We can watch Gossip Girl on HBO Max. That's 16 of the 32, so that's the halfway point. It's also about the halfway point of this show, so I'll take a quick break here to say that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com. And these are the best Thanksgiving episodes on television. So number 17 of 32 on our list is Grey's Anatomy, Season 2, Episode 9. Thanks for the memories. Thanksgiving is already hard enough. Now, imagine being a surgical intern and wanting to cook an elaborate dinner for your coworkers who are busy in their own right. Such is the problem Izzy, played by Katherine Heigl, faces in this fun Season 2 episode of Grey's, which also includes George, played by T.R. Knight, being forced to participate in his family's turkey hunting tradition. We can watch Grey's Anatomy on Hulu. How I Met Your Mother, Season 3, Episode 9, Slapsgiving. Slapsgiving continues in the tradition of one of the most hilarious long-running gags on the hit sitcom. Marshall, played by Jason Segel, won a bet against Barney, played by Neil Patrick Harris, and as his prize, he gets to slap Barney 5 times. Meanwhile, Ted, played by Josh Radnor, and Robin, played by Kobe Smulders, are trying to get over the awkward post-breakup but still friends phase they find themselves in. We can watch How I Met Your Mother on Hulu. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Season 9, Episode 10. The gang squashes their beefs. Some people gather around close family and friends at Thanksgiving, but that's just not the It's Always Sunny gang's style. They invite the various enemies they've made over 9 seasons of bad behavior, including standouts like Liam and Ryan McPoyle, played by Jimmy Simpson and Nate Mooney, Huang, played by Shelley Desai, Gail the Snail, played by Mary Lynn Rashgub, and Cricket, played by David Hornsby, in hopes of making amends for their years of bad behavior. We can watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on Hulu. Master of None, Season 2, Episode 8, it's named Thanksgiving. While exploring the past of chosen family members Dev, played by Aziz Ansari, and Denise, played by Lena Waithe, Master of None's Thanksgiving episode follows Denise's journey of coming into her own as a queer woman and dives into her relationship with her biological family, including her mother, Catherine, played by Angela Bassett, in a powerful, emotional story. The episode earned an Emmy win for Waithe and Ansari's writing and a nomination for Bassett's performance. We can watch Master of None on Netflix. The Mindy Project, Season 1, Episode 6. The episode is named Thanksgiving. Mindy, played by Mindy Kaling, goes to her best friend Gwen's, that's Anna Camp's, for a Connecticut Thanksgiving, where she awkwardly runs into Dennis, played by Ed Helms, her blind date from the pilot, and things go quickly downhill from there. The whole mess culminates in the two BFFs getting in a massive fight and Mindy jumping on top of Dennis. We can watch The Mindy Project on Hulu. Modern Family, Season 6, Episode 8, Three Turkeys. Phil, played by Ty Burrell, and Luke, played by Nolan Gould, are in charge of prepping the turkey for the main dish. What could go wrong? Claire, played by Julie Bowen, supplies a secret backup turkey, while Jay, played by Ed O'Neill, and Gloria, played by Sofia Vergara, decide to serve up a cozy Thanksgiving together after their vacation gets canceled. Naturally, none of these schemes go according to plan. We can watch Modern Family on Hulu. New Girl, Season 2, Episode 8. The episode is titled Parents. Jess Day, played by Zooey Deschanel, took inspiration from Parent Trap in New Girl's great Season 2 Thanksgiving episode. All the family dysfunction has a seat at the table, from a scheme to get Jess's parents back together to the Battle of the Schmitz, and guest stars that include Jamie Lee Curtis, Rob Reiner, and Rob Riggle. It's no surprise the half hour is a fan favorite. We can watch New Girl on Hulu. The Office, Season 7, Episode 9, WUPHF.com. 2 words, hay maze. With Thanksgiving around the corner, Dwight, played by Rainn Wilson, recreates his childhood memory of his uncle's hay place in the Dundler Mifflin parking lot. Determined to overcome his childhood disappointment of never being crowned Hay King, he loses Angela, played by Angela Kinsey, to her future husband and Oscar's future lover, Senator Robert Lipton, played by Jack Coleman in the process. We can watch The Office on Peacock. Parenthood, Season 2, Episode 10, Happy Thanksgiving. The Braverman clan is enormous, and its holiday hour showcases the relatable chaos of a huge family gathering. the awkwardness of brewing issues to the anxiety of getting the meal just right with everyone on edge with their own personal issues, the episode covers a lot of ground with which viewers are familiar. Pandemonium aside, the Bravermans are a strong family unit and a great reminder of why we choose to return home. We can watch Parenthood on Amazon Prime Video to buy. Our number 26 of 32 is Seinfeld Season 6, Episode 8, The Mom and Pop Store. While this episode may be the only one not to feature a family-filled day of stuffing and turkeys, you'll have to see the butter shave to get your bird fix. This Seinfeld classic features the second most Thanksgiving-y thing, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Elaine, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, wins Mr. Pitt, played by Ian Abercrombie, a spot holding Woody the Woodpecker in the parade. Everyone is invited to Tim Watley's, that's Bryan Cranston's, night before Thanksgiving party, except Jerry, played by Jerry Seinfeld. And George, played by Jason Alexander, buys John Voight's car. In true Seinfeld fashion, each event comes together in the end in the cringiest way possible. We can watch Seinfeld on Netflix. That 70s Show, Season 1, Episode 9, Thanksgiving. Eric, played by Topher Grace, gets antsy when Lori, played by Lisa Robin Kelly, brings her flirty college friend home for Thanksgiving, who ends up kissing him. Donna, played by Laura Prepon, is none too pleased when she finds out, while Kitty, played by Deborah Jo Rupp, frets over the impending arrival of Red's mother. The kids end up forgetting to pick her up, a blessing in disguise, before Donna and Eric make up. Essentially, it's your typical 70s show holiday. We can watch that 70s show on Peacock. This Is Us, Season 1, Episode 8, Pilgrim Rick. In flashback, Jack, played by Milo Ventimiglia, Rebecca, played by Mandy Moore, and the Big Three get stranded on the way to Rebecca's mom's house and begin a tradition of their own, one that involves a killer hat and convenience store hot dogs. And in the present day, the family attempts to keep the tradition alive, even without Jack. We can watch This Is Us on Hulu. We're coming down to the last three. Again, these weren't ranked, but number 29 is Veep, Season 5, Episode 5. The title is Thanksgiving. For some families, arguing about politics is practically a Thanksgiving tradition. This Season 5 installment of Veep may not be an escape, but it does demonstrate the absurdity of American politics, with President Selina Meyer, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, pardoning turkeys at the White House ahead of a salmonella outbreak. But this is the least of her concerns as she undergoes eye surgery and can't be seen in public for a while, leading to hilarious chaos. We can watch Veep on HBO Max. The West Wing, Season 3, Episode 8. The title is The Indians in the Lobby. As President Bartlet, Martin Sheen rings up the Butterball Turkey Talk line for tips. CJ, played by Allison Janney, spends the day before Thanksgiving with a group of Native Americans who say they will stay in the lobby of the White House in protest over the land legislation for which they've already waited 15 years. We can watch The West Wing on HBO Max. What I Like About You, Season 4, Episode 9, Ground Turkey Hog Day. Vic, played by Dan Cortese, goes on a Thanksgiving date with an ex after she beats Val, played by Jenny Garth, in a charity date auction. Lauren, played by Leslie Grossman, goes to meet her married online boyfriend and finds out it's Val's ex, Rick, played by Edward Kerr, so it's up to Holly, played by Amanda Bynes and company, to keep Val occupied as her romantic life goes up in flames. In a Thanksgiving miracle, Vic and Val finally kiss and decide to postpone the annulment of their marriage. We can watch What I Like About You on Amazon Prime Video to buy. And number 32 of 32, which is absolutely a classic. I was wondering where it was on this list. It had been missing. WKRP in Cincinnati, Season 1, Episode 7, Turkeys Away. Turkeys Away is not only regarded as WKRP in Cincinnati's most iconic episode, but one of the best Thanksgiving episodes in television history. After WKRP radio station manager Arthur Carlson, played by Gordon Jump, comes up with a harebrained promotion to drop live turkeys. This is just so funny, I still remember it. To drop live turkeys from a helicopter outside a shopping center. The stunt turns disastrous and grimly hilarious, ending with Carlson's famous line, "As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly." As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. We can watch WKRP in Cincinnati on Apple TV to buy, and it might well be worth the purchase right there. Okay, that was the 32 best Thanksgiving episodes to watch this holiday season, from Gilmore Girls to Modern Family. Prepare for a different kind of Turkey Day binge. That was a lot, and you can always re-listen to this episode online. And you can go to the website to get the details if you want to go back to some of these well past Thanksgiving, because there are some fun episodes here. That was by Allison Sadlier, Rachel DeSantis, Kevin Jacobson, and Alamine Johannes. Those lists have mostly ruled the episode for this time, but I have a few stories to wind us up. First, this is exclusive to Entertainment Weekly. Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt reveal major update on Jungle Cruise sequel at Disney. Johnson and Blunt tells Entertainment Weekly where things stand on the long-awaited sequel to Disney's Jungle Cruise, based on Walt Disney's beloved theme park attraction. This is by Joey Nolfi. Those still hoping for a Jungle Cruise sequel might be in denial, as his awards season prospects set sail for the 2026 Oscars. Star Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson exclusively tells Entertainment Weekly that plans for a sequel to his 2021 Disney blockbuster Jungle Cruise, also starring his longtime friend and current Smashing Machine co-star Emily Blunt, have sunk. When asked by the Awardist podcast host Jared Hall if a long-rumored follow-up to the film, which managed to earn $220 million at the global box office just as movie theaters reopened en masse following the COVID pandemic, was still on deck, both Johnson and Blunt gave a simple reply. "I don't think so," both stars say, with Johnson, who also produced the film, elaborating further on why the Jungle Cruise sequel might not happen, at least in the near future. "I think when Disney came under new leadership, they just shifted coming out of COVID," the 53-year-old explains. "COVID shifted our business in a lot of ways. I think they looked at that property and thought, we did it once, not sure if we should revisit it again, despite whether or not our chemistry was great." Blunt adds they did not want to set sail again, and that's fine. Current Disney CEO Bob Iger was previously with the company from 2005 to 2020, with gestation on the Jungle Cruise film version involving Johnson reportedly beginning in 2015. Bob Chapek briefly took over from 2020 to 2022, with Iger eventually returning to the CEO role, which he still holds today. Representatives at Disney did not respond to Entertainment Weekly's request for comment. Directed by Nonstop and The Shallows helmer Jaume Colet-Serra, Jungle Cruise drew inspiration from Walt Disney's beloved Jungle Cruise boat attraction that first opened in July 1955 at Disneyland in Anaheim, California, with elements based on the classic 1951 Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn film, The African Queen. The ride welcomes guests for a journey through the jungle aboard boats driven by skippers, who make comedic jokes and wisecracking puns as they take riders past scenes that include hungry piranhas, bathing elephants, and the famous backside of water sequence that sees the boats pass behind a waterfall. Before the release of Jungle Cruise in 2021, Disney opened many subsequent iterations of the Jungle Cruise ride at its parks around the world, including in 1971 at Disney World's Magic Kingdom, Tokyo Disneyland in 1983, and Hong Kong Disneyland in 2005. The plot of the film somewhat mirrored that of the ride, with Johnson starring as Frank Wolfe, a skipper hired by McGregor Houghton, played by Jack Whitehall, and botanist Dr. Lily Houghton, played by Blunt, to take them deep into the heart of the Amazon in search of the Tears of the Moon, a tree with magic healing powers. The film received general critical praise and earned a healthy, given the state of the global theatrical market at the time, global haul of just under $221 million at the box office. Since then, Johnson and Blunt reteamed for The Smashing Machine, a biographical drama directed by Benny Safdie based on the life of MMA fighter Mark Kerr. We can listen to Smashing Machine stars Johnson and Blunt talk about Jungle Cruise in the Awardist podcast that's linked in the article. That's Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt reveal major update on Jungle Cruise sequel at Disney. That was exclusive to Entertainment Weekly, and it was by Joey Nolfi. Brendan Fraser has a score to settle with The Mummy 4. The one I wanted to make was never made. Fraser said he and the crew gave it our best shot on 2008's threequel, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. This is by Wesley Stenzel. Brendan Fraser has a few things to wrap up with The Mummy 4. During an interview with the Associated Press, the whale actor confirmed that he'll return for a fourth fantasy adventure movie in the franchise that solidified him as an action star, and indicated that this is the Mummy installment that he's always been working toward. "The one I wanted to make was never made," Fraser told the outlet, explaining how the franchise took a detour with 2008's Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. "The third one was a model of, how can I say this to the AP reporter? NBC had the rights to broadcast the Olympics that year, so they put two together and we went to China." The threequel saw Rob Cohen from The Fast and the Furious take over directorial reins from Stephen Sommers, who helmed the first two installments in the series, and also enlisted Maria Bello to portray Evelyn, Evie, Carnahan after Rachel Weisz played her in the first two movies. While the first two films took place in Egypt, the third moved the action to China, which Fraser maintains was a lovely working environment. "Working in Shanghai was an incredible experience," the Oscar winner said. "I'm proud of the third one because I think it's a good standalone movie. We picked up and we did what we do with a different crew on deck and gave it our best shot." However, he reiterated that Tomb of the Dragon Emperor did not continue the franchise in the way that he had envisioned. "The one I wanted to make is forthcoming," he said, "and I've been waiting 20 years for this call. Sometimes it was loud, sometimes it was a faint telegraph. Now, it's time to give the fans what they want." Earlier this month, Entertainment Weekly reported that Fraser and Weisz were looking to return to the franchise for a fourth installment. The film will be directed by Matt Bettolini-Olpin and Tyler Gillett, the filmmaking duo also known as Radio Silence, who previously helmed 2019's Ready or Not, and the most recent two Scream installments. The film will be written by David Kogesal, who penned scripts for the Predator prequel Prey and The Deliverance. Fraser's Mummy journey began with Sommers' 1999 revival of the Universal horror franchise, which added a swashbuckling action-adventure spirit that the original 1930s and 40s installment lacked. Fraser, Weitz, and Somers quickly reteamed for the 2001 sequel, The Mummy Returns, which featured Dwayne Johnson in his first film role. Johnson went on to headline the 2002 theatrical spinoff, The Scorpion King, which in turn launched a series of direct-to-video sequels starring other actors as the titular warrior. After Tomb of the Dragon Emperor premiered to scathing reviews in 2008, Universal opted to reboot The Mummy 9 years later with Tom Cruise in the lead role and Sofia Boutella as the undead antagonist. The film, which also starred Russell Crowe as Dr. Jekyll, was intended to launch Universal's Dark Universe, which would have unified new iterations of the studio's classic monsters like Dracula and Frankenstein's monster in a Marvel-esque shared universe. The studio ultimately abandoned those plans for undisclosed reasons. That was Brendan Fraser has a score to settle with The Mummy 4. The one I wanted to make was never made. And it was by Wesley Stenzel. And as we start to wrap up, this is a good one because Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are wrapping up. This is how Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are officially saying goodbye to their Wicked characters. I will love you always. Something has changed within them since filming the two-part movie musical. This is by Emlyn Travis. It's safe to say that Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande have been changed for good after starring in the Wicked films. The actresses both took to social media to bid fond farewells to their beloved characters Elphaba and Galinda following the official release of the musical's second installment, Wicked for Good. Erivo posted a collection of behind-the-scenes images from her time shooting the two-part movie musical, including photos of her walking down the yellow brick road, posing with all of her co-stars, and soaring through the air on a broom. I could write you an essay, a poem, Shakespearean prose, to describe what this journey has meant to me, what lessons this time has taught me, bought me, she captioned the post. I could try to give a metric to the love I have felt and experienced. I could give a number to the stories I've heard. The truth is, the numbers are too small and the words are not enough. Erivo continued, so I'll simply say this. Take my hand and walk with me to the end of this road paved with gold, and hopefully the things that I've found might find you too. Thank you for letting me be your Elphaba. All my love, C. In the comments section, the official Wicked movie account responded, words cannot describe how thankful we are to you, our ever-enchanting Elphaba, green heart emoji. Grande celebrated her character Galinda in her own post, which similarly featured behind-the-scenes snapshots of her inspecting her character's many pink gowns, posed outside of her trailer and holding Galinda's wand. Thank you, my sweet Galinda, for everything, she wrote. I will love you always. Wicked for Good is out now. The Wicked film account took a moment to praise Grande in her post's comment section, too. Thank you for being our dazzling Galinda. Double heart emoji. Of course it's pink. It shared, you've changed us all for good. In addition to their posts, the Wicked account also shared extra footage of Grande and Erivo hugging, giggling, dancing, and even tackling each other on the Wicked for Good set. A friendship that changed us all for good. And then there's an emoji of hands making a heart shape, it wrote. The second installment of the Wicked film series, Wicked for Good, follows the ever-changing relationship between Elphaba and Galinda, as they step into their roles as the Wicked Witch of the West and Galinda, the Good Witch. Speaking with Entertainment Weekly, series director John M. Chu revealed that the success of the first film, which was nominated for 10 Oscars, had a direct impact on how they put together its sequel. When initially planning these two movies, you don't know how people are going to take it, he said at the time. You're like, well, they're going to want the fun and the dance in movie two, so we got to make sure it is light and bubbly, but For Good is not a light and bubbly story. things have shattered. He continued, "You're planning and plotting like, okay, we're going to keep some of the fun in dancing. You've got to do this and that. But as soon as the first movie came out, we realized you don't need any of that S. The audience is in and they want the characters to grow. It gave me a lot of freedom, actually, because now I could sit in that silence. Now I know I don't have to sugarcoat some of those moments." That was how Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are officially saying goodbye to their Wicked characters. "I will love you always." And it was by Emlyn Travis. And this is the time for me to say goodbye for Entertainment Weekly this week. You've been listening to Entertainment Weekly. I've been reading from their website, EW.com, here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury. Come back next week and I'll have new articles from the website for you. Until then, I thank you for listening and putting up with some of my laughter this week. Until next time, goodbye.